The topic for the next half hour is the pilot experience at the local airport, and there are few non-commercial pilots who've seen more different instances of this pilot experience than Michael Combs, our first guest in this segment. Michael is the creator of a project known as the Flight for the Human Spirit, part aviation, part inspiration. Michael was a guest on EAA Radio in 2010, just after the project commenced, and at that time he was in the midst of pursuing the goal of visiting all 50 states in a light sport aircraft. Since then, he's flown into more than 200 airports around the U.S., has flown in 49 of the 50 states. He has set world records, spoken in scores of public events, reached millions of people with his message that it's never, ever too late to follow your dreams. And Michael, I apologize for stealing your thunder, because I know that that's kind of your line, but it's such a concise way to kind of explain what it is that you're about.
I think I'm going to just take you with me everywhere I go, Mike. That's a fantastic introduction. Thank you. Thank you.
And welcome also to Michelle Combs.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming by. It's nice to see you again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It always takes a supportive ground crew, right, to make something in the air really happen, doesn't it?
Well, I think it's more of a heart crew, somebody just to back you up no matter what you're doing.
So let's talk about what it is that you have been doing. In the last several months, you and those who work closely with you, your son and your support crew, have been pursuing yet another world record. Let's talk about that.
We did. And just for the audience, Mike, I've been flying a Remos light sport. It's a Remos GX light sport aircraft. Manufactured in Germany, all carbon fiber. Two-seater aircraft, weighs 810 pounds, powered by the Rotax 100-horse engine. Our endeavor just 3 weeks and, 4 days ago now, was to set a new world record by flying from Palomar Airport, the Carlsbad, California area in San Diego, to Wilmington, North Carolina, under sport pilot rules. In other words, no flying at night, can't fly over 10,000 feet, and the other restrictions that come with that certificate. No one believed that we could do it. And you know me well enough, those are fighting words to me. It's like, okay, tell me I can't do something, and I'll prove to you that it's possible. And the second point was that we couldn't fly a light sport aircraft under those conditions, coast to coast. My only doubt in the journey, and it ended up to be 2,377 miles that we covered in 2 days. My only question was the actual weather patterns. Having 2 days of flyable weather for a light sport aircraft from coast to coast is nearly impossible to do. And that by far was our biggest challenge, and it always will be, no matter what we're flying.
So how were the how was the flight timed in order to qualify for the world record? Was it time in air? Was it total time over a period of calendar days? How does that work?
That's a great question. This was an FAI-sanctioned event. FAI and the NAA are both. The NAA is the U.S. organization that oversees aviation records, and the FAI is the world organization that oversees aviation records. Basically, in a nutshell, you fly from point A to point B, whatever distance that is, and you divide that by your slowest flap speed that is rated by the manufacturer of the aircraft. So for us, it was 43 hours that we had to make it. You say 43 hours to fly coast to coast, that's a no-brainer. If I run the numbers, I could make it in 18 to 20 hours, take time out to sleep or whatever, then we'll be fine. But you have to keep in mind that once that clock starts running, it runs nonstop until you touch down at your point B, wherever that is. So for us, 2,300 miles included stopping for fuel, routing around storms, literally, and likewise stopping for the night to comply with the requirements of the sport pilot restrictions.
Okay.
So that's the second challenge there, is making it under the sport pilot rules.
So what was the outcome?
Outcome is very interesting. We had perfect weather predictions when we took off from California. I had to have a special VFR permission to take off because of the low clouds, and we were within 7 minutes of our drop dead time to delay it to the next day. But the weather looked so good the rest of the country, it's like we're going for it. We got as far as Phoenix on day one, and on that second flight leg, we started hitting horrendous winds. that bounced us around the rest of the day. We didn't make our final destination for flight day one. We missed it by about an hour and a half. So we were an hour and a half behind as we started day number two. By the time we had reached Birmingham, Alabama, we were 2 hours ahead of schedule. So we really thought that we had it. By the time we reached Atlanta, we had a lot of pop-up storms going on that followed us. I had to divert to an emergency airport to get on the ground, where literally I was holding the front of Hope One on the ground to keep it from blowing away.
Oh, my goodness.
It was horrible.
That picture disturbed me.
Yeah.
Like, please stop. Please just stop now.
But we had hail and rain and winds, Mike, so it was that was a heroic event as it was. But then the sky started to clear up. We talked to the tower in Wilmington, and they said, by the time you get here, we'll be clear. So we thought, okay, we're setting a world record, and it's under the umbrella of the Flight for the Human Spirit. The human spirit won't give up. And that's one thing I've found throughout this entire project. If you don't want to, if you want to make sure you get something done, say that you're doing it for the human spirit, and you will never give up. But to make a long story short, we took off again, hoping to make it to Wilmington. We did not. We had regional controllers helping us. We had our own crew helping us. We had XM satellite radar helping us, and We got to our emergency airport on that leg. We were 91 miles shy, and literally we had a 10-mile window of open air. The clouds had moved in all around us, and literally these clouds were on radar. They were black lined by red. They weren't like the green kind. And they were cloud to ground lightning, and I said to them, we've got to set down. This is it. The hallmark of the flight, as you know, has been safety. And world record will wait for us, I know. So we ended up landing in Florence, South Carolina, 91 miles shy. That airport had just experienced 70-mile-an-hour winds, so they were without power. So we landed on a dark runway, as it was. But glad to be down. And it was aviation's finest hour, let me tell you. It was an exciting moment. And I still have goosebumps just thinking about it, but we'll try it again. We proved to everybody, yes, you can do it. And that's the exciting part. Yeah. So we'll try it again. The nice part is the next day we did make it to Wilmington. We ended up setting a national record for speed. One of our fans called me the fastest sport pilot in the world.
And they did think about going again. I mean, we started positioning to try to get it done again in the next week, just because we had to do it ahead of EAA Air Venture.
Yeah.
But the weather just didn't cooperate, so it'll have to be wait until next year.
Right.
Yeah.
So is this still the best time of the year to try something like that, by the way?
No.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is because there's a lot of convective activity, particularly around the southern U.S., coast to coast. So you're likely to have problems with weather, but for what we had to do, we needed the longest flying days of sunlight.
Of course, okay.
Which happens right around the 21st of June every year. Only thing we'll do different next year is we'll take off from a different airport so we can hopefully get out at 5:15, which is sunrise, civil twilight, on the West Coast. And not have to worry about the ground fog.
Okay, fascinating. How much pre-planning, how many weeks, hours, months of pre-planning did you estimate went into this?
This particular trip, Mike, was little over 2 years in planning. And that's what made it so disappointing is planning this trip for 2 years and monitoring weather constantly. Trying to figure the best route, the best airports, and on and on.
And the FBOs were prepped and ready to do like NASCAR stops, you know, like run out with the tires, run out with the gas,
get
it, because we couldn't be on the ground more than 20 minutes to make the record.
You budgeted yourself that stops of 20 minutes.
Yes.
The fastest one, just so everybody knows, was an 11-minute stop. And you think, you land, you taxi up, get out of the plane, the clock's running, They have to fuel the plane. You know, you check weather real quick and you're back up in the sky inside of 11 minutes.
Really?
In a GA aircraft just pulling to an average FBO. That's pretty exciting.
Wow, what did they have the fuel truck by you
literally,
kind of on the taxiway? Oh,
literally
my
they did. Our team had contacted the airport. They were following us. We have spider tracks for life, satellite tracking. Everybody knew, and then we called the FBO, we're coming in, the UNICOM. So, it was...
My goodness.
It was a great experience.
Wow. So you have landed in let me start this over again. The Flight for the Human Spirit has involved you landing in hundreds of airports.
Yes.
Many times more than most GA pilots will ever land in.
Mm-hmm.
You just talked about a pretty extraordinary local pilot experience or local airport experience, but there was some planning, right? They knew you were coming. There was real intention behind that. The average experience is not quite that way.
No, it's not. Not quite at all.
Yeah.
We can't even say quite in that response, yeah. Can we?
Well, I haven't seen it through your eyes. I've just heard you tell some stories.
Sure.
And one of the things that we're talking about in this hour is things that probably should be better than they are with the FBO experience. But just kind of rattle off, if you could, some key experiences that you thought, when they were over.
And I can give you a plus and a minus, a yin and yang on that.
Absolutely.
Because we have literally been to over 200 different airports in this journey, reaching 28 million people. And we've had, I had one experience in Savannah, Georgia. I won't name the FBO, but the entire experience of landing, talking to the fueler and paying the bill, all was done without speaking a single word, which to me in aviation is just unbelievable. Because typically the line guys are your biggest fans, you know, they're just aviation nuts, and to go all the way through that experience without even speaking. Even when I paid the bill, I walked up, told her my tail number, and she gave me the receipt, slid it across, and kind of tapped it with her finger for me to sign the receipt. And I, at that point, that was my mission, to get out without saying a word.
Interesting.
But that's one side of it. The other side is, boy, there's so many different FBOs. But
I was thinking Showalter.
Yeah, Showalter in Orlando. Took the plane, the keys, washed the plane, filled it up, put it in a hangar without any question of the reliability of their service.
They do profit sharing, so everybody's in on good service. Everyone on the team is rewarded for good service, and it showed. Really showed.
Yeah.